Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
Dylan.
Hey, Matt.
It's that magical time of year because Christmas is almost here. It's like 2 or 3 weeks away from the day that this episode comes out. Hey, that's great. So November and December, obviously, for the most part, we're like, this is the time where we talk about those classics that have endured throughout the many, many years.
Yes.
But then someone was like, hey, let's drop a movie that's specifically made for Dylan and Matt this year. And 8-Bit Christmas came out. And we were like, yo, we have to watch 8-Bit Christmas.
I think since the trailer dropped, I was like, I need to see this. And not only that, I think it would be a great movie to cover. So last night, I watched two movies that I've never seen before. One was 8-Bit Christmas, and the other one was Love Actually.
Oh.
I had never seen Love Actually. And last night I saw probably what will be one of my favorite movies of all time. And I also watched 8-Bit Christmas.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding.
It's so funny. I was hanging out. So I watched this with four people last night. And all four of them are fans of Christmas 365.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, no, Matt, you really like this. That means that it's going to shit on it.
Dude, it's the bit. No, I didn't hate this. I didn't hate this at all. I just wanted to see your face if I said that. I absolutely adore Love Actually.
Have you tried Love Hard yet?
No.
So Love Hard is a new Netflix Christmas movie. Its name is terrible.
Yeah.
Because it's based on them arguing in one scene over what's a better Christmas movie, Love Actually or Die Hard. So the name of the entire movie because of one scene became Love Hard.
Yeah.
But it is it should have been called Catfish for Christmas because it's about a girl who falls head over heels for a guy she meets on a dating app and decides to fly to his house for Christmas to surprise him. And then it turns out that it's Jimmy Yang who is using photos of a guy in his town for Tinder. So she's like, well, while I'm in town, I'm going to find that dude that you pretended to be and fuck him.
Oh, my God. But this also sounds fantastic. So
it's as long as you shut off your brain.
Yeah.
Like, how the fuck in the world of FaceTime do you not see this person's face before you jump on a plane to visit them? And I'm like, look, I don't like to think about that when I'm watching my Christmas movies. I just want to see them kiss at the end. And whatever weird path it takes to get there, that's all. I don't care.
It's true. And that's, I think that's why, like, Catfish is kind of losing its steam. Because you're like, if you are going on the show Catfish now, we just know you're kind of an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't do anything.
Exactly. I liked 8-Bit Christmas. I followed it up with Love Actually, and I think Love Actually is overall a better movie.
But I'll tell you what, when I was watching this, we'll jump to the infamous question, did you cry? All four of us watching this movie had some sniffles going on as the credits rolled before we were like,
yep,
that's going to be a yearly watch.
Yep, we cried at the end. Like, specifically, like, we're gonna spoil this, guys. If you haven't seen 8-Bit Christmas, stop now, watch 8-Bit Christmas, and then come back.
Here's yeah, here's like the quick pitch. It is a Christmas story for the 80s. It's 100%. Like the Goldbergs. It's the Goldbergs meet a Christmas story. I vaguely am aware of the writer of this movie. He wrote a book 6 years ago called 8-Bit Christmas and then was tapped to turn it into a film. He's friends with Jonathan at Geekscape. So they did an episode to promote this on Geekscape. And he actively said, Christmas Story is not just my favorite Christmas movie. It is legitimately my favorite movie of all time.
We're going to talk to that guy. And if he's listening to this, I apologize. I swear to God, earlier it was just a bit. Don't be mad.
He already shut off the
episode. I loved the movie. I just thought it was a funny bit. I'm sorry. Because it is true. I mean, everything that Matt loves, I hate. And everything that I love, Matt is indifferent towards.
Yeah. Because I'm much nicer than you. I prefer indifference to hate. But no, it's this really charming story, and I love that it exists in storyteller logic.
Yes. Right?
So like it establishes very early on, you know, Neil Patrick Harris is telling the story of how he got his NES to his daughter. And in the very beginning, he's riding a bike. And he's like, and I was wearing a helmet. And you see, like, he's definitely not wearing a helmet. And a helmet pops onto his head. And she's like, was it a green helmet? And he's like, yes. And the helmet changes colors. And it's a pretty funny bit. It's not like the laugh out loud or anything. But what I think it also establishes is right out the gate, we are establishing that Neil Patrick Harris's character is possibly exaggerating elements of this story.
Very much so.
So, like, the more fantastical stuff of, like, the bully being played by borderline a full-grown adult.
Yo.
Compared to these kids.
It was, like 40.
Yeah. I loved it. But I'm, like, I love that because it is that, like, that unreliable narrator aspect. And it's very fantastical. I just found the whole world of it charming.
It was.
And it was so relatable. Like, just even the opening setup of them at the bully's house. And everyone's just like, fuck it, this kid's an asshole.
Oh, the rich
he's got
kid's
an
house.
NES. Yeah, we're just like, he's got an NES, so we'll do whatever it fucking takes to get in here. Which has a great bit when he gets the power glove and even like the school coach is outside trying to get in.
So we watched this in two sittings. The first sitting was the day before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And the issue is like we were both stressed, like because we knew we had families coming over. So I feel like that tampered my love of the first half of the movie because like I had my mind was elsewhere. Finishing it up last night, like it literally stopped at the halfway point.
Yeah.
Finishing it up last night, I really did love the movie. I'm definitely going to go back before the season's over and rewatch it. I have my own little quips with it, but it has nothing to do with the writing or the movie itself. I really wish they could have gotten the rights to like some good Nintendo games.
Wait, you're not a fan of Paperboy and Rampage?
No, sorry. Rampage and Paperboy are not the two games that come to mind when I think of Nintendo. Although I did want to see Neil Patrick Harris make a Zelda Light Bright at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
he that would have been
he
so
promised
cool.
it and then didn't follow through. I also really kind of appreciate it. Even like he pulls out the Duck Hunt game and he's playing a game that's not Duck Hunt.
That's not Duck Hunt. Gun. Yep.
Yeah, like, yep. But
totally get it. I totally get it. I'm shocked they were able to like get. I don't know what the rights are with showing the NES itself, but knowing Nintendo, they're not gonna give you like permission to show like Mario or Legend of Zelda. This isn't The Wizard. We're not advertising a game here.
And I do have to say, after you watch the 8-Bit Christmas movie, you should go check out the episode of Geekscape with the writer. Not only is he like insanely insightful, but he talks about like, you know, hey, I wrote this book and then I had to write this screenplay. A lot more limitations when you're writing it. And he's like, and at the end of the day, you just have to make the decisions of like, is this important to me because it's how it really played out, or is it important to me because it's how the story needs to move forward? So like you do have to like make those sacrifices for the greater good. So it's like, you know what? I almost like that Mario and Zelda weren't in the movie because it really is about the system.
Yeah.
And the need for the want of that console over anything else.
Yeah. Because I mean, we got to take it back to that time. I mean, like at that time, there was no way to get arcade quality games in your household. All arcade ports at that time were complete dog shit. I mean, look at the Pac-Man port for Atari. It doesn't look anything like the arcade version as it was promised. So this was the first time that you had the opportunity to play arcade quality games in your home. And I honestly, going back, I absolutely loved the movie. I want to watch it again because I feel like once you get to that ending, you get a different perspective on the whole movie itself. Here we go. We're going to spoil it. At the end, Neil Patrick Harris's character, he doesn't get the Nintendo. I mean, you think you're going to get a Christmas Story moment as there's like a package in the background and it falls and it was sent by their rich uncle. And I mean, it is shaped just like a Nintendo and he rips that bad boy open. You find out his uncle lives in Japan. He's putting everything together. He's like, oh my God, this is it. And it's a Japanese light bright.
Yeah. So then they give you a second fake out.
Exactly. The second
with
fake
Steve
out.
Zahn, with Steve Zahn being like, oh, you should go out back. And
yo,
clean up the
I
poop.
Started
Start.
Crying when that happened, when he's like, go clean up the poop. I leaned over. I was like, the Nintendo's outside. The Nintendo's behind the shed.
Behind the shed. Because earlier he's like, don't go behind the shed. Like he was like, you just do up front. You don't. And I didn't think about it then. But then he's like, you can go behind the shed. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. So like I'm getting all excited. And then like what it actually is like the most harp. Like I'm choking up talking about it. Steve Zahn throughout the whole movie
I think he steals the show though.
He steals the show. The whole movie the joke is that he started to build a countertop for their house and has not stopped doing construction on the house ever since.
Yeah.
And he even tells him at one point, like, why aren't you going outside and playing in the fresh air? Like when I was a kid, we would build forts and like that was where our fun is. So the kid goes outside and his dad has built him the fucking dopest tree fort
so cool.
in the
it's
world.
Like Monster Squad style. Like, I mean,
oh,
that treehouse was
it's
so
fucking
cool.
amazing.
He's like, let's do a trap door. It's got a trap door. It's got a trap door. Oh my God. Yo, I'm not going to lie. As soon as the movie ended, I walked to my backyard and I was like, how do I, if I start growing a tree now, like, because the backyard's completely empty, but I'm like, if I start growing a tree now in a few years, like, was insane.
But that so the movie, it's just like sadness over sadness at that point, right? Yeah. So you're already like emotionally overjoyed by all the sweetness, and the dad's like, you have to put your initial on the tree is like your craftsmanship.
Oh,
so he
God.
Does that. So he does that, and then he's telling the story to the daughter.
I love what the daughter goes. The Nintendo was in the treehouse, right? I thought too. I was like, the Nintendo's gonna be in the treehouse.
Yeah, like we're still like very set on the Nintendo. But yeah, so the daughter's like, she's telling everybody the story, and then it cuts to an empty chair at the table, implying that the dad's died.
God.
And that's like, okay, now you're like already like crying, and then the daughter's like, you forgot the best part of the story. And he's like, what? And she's like, that was the Christmas you and dad finally found your thing. And then it just cuts to all the things with their initials in the house. And it's just like, it's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful love letter to like.
It is.
Because I can't speak for you, but I know like for me, I had that same relationship with my dad where it's like there's this gruffness of like, he came from such a different world and background than what I was into. He was the athlete and the popular kid, and he ended up with me as a son. Aww. But like, there are these things where it's like, hey, we built this patio together. Like we did like we would always do like the home refurnishing together, and I would try to help out like to the best of my abilities.
Yeah.
There is that thing where it's like, when you do find that thing that like you do connect with your dad about, especially if you've always had like the most head buddy relationship, like those are those beautiful moments.
It is. I mean, this part of the movie is such a tonal shift compared to the rest of the movie, but it's not in a bad way. Like
it's
it
not
really
unearned.
Does. No, it does. It ties everything together. And if you look back throughout the movie, there is an emphasis on his relationship with his father. You don't really think about it at the time because, again, the entire focus is on getting that Nintendo. But there is the Steve Zahn's character making sure he's got his retainer in his mouth. It's, hey, why don't you go outside and do these things? Why don't you, the typical parent argument. And And it's just, the ending is so, so fucking beautiful. Yes, it 100%, is. Dude. We all cried. And if you don't cry, there's something wrong with you. Because that, yeah, that really tugs at your heartstrings. I do, there's some little moments that I do love. The fact that he ended up marrying the woman who has the same boots as him as a kid.
Adorable.
That, absolutely adorable.
I also love the absurdity of scenes. Like, we talked about the bully. The dog getting crushed by the television set.
Oh my god, that came out of nowhere. He's gonna break it. And then he kicks it at the TV. And remember, we're in 88, so those TVs weighed like a ton. That TV just comes down and like just Stew from Scream.
Well, I was just about to say, if that dog survived that, I'm suddenly on board for maybe Stew does survive and is in part 5. Because if that little dog can survive that, then I have faith in Stew's face.
I do love there's a bit later on in the movie where the rich kid's dad is giving a public service announcement about violence in video games, because he says that the violence in the video game led to his dog getting crushed. And they do like a slideshow of the dog and like a little cast.
Well, the best part, my sister always talks about how the funniest thing to her in any TV show is like the people whose job is just to yell something in the background of a scene.
Yeah.
And that slide comes up, and I'm not sure if you had the subtitles on, but I did. And you hear someone in the back go, "Oh God, is that a dog?"
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. But my favorite element of absurdity in the entire movie, because again, it's like the Sandlot, right? Like, there's that scene in the Sandlot where like you see the giant monstrous dog jumping up to eat the ball. And it's like, you know that it's all like in the kid's head. It's when he's finally purchased the Nintendo. They're on the out. He slips on the ice. The Nintendo gets run over by the bus, and then for no explainable reason, it just explodes.
Oh, God.
Like, it's complete, like, child cartoon logic, and I fucking love it. Like, it's brilliant.
Like, thinking back, you made reference to this a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Christmas Story versus Hocus Pocus and why a Christmas Story works better as a 24-hour movie. This is very similar. Like, there's different bits within this movie. It's very sketch comedy like, and I absolutely adore it. And that's why it's so easy to pick out your particular favorite moments, because everything's kind of happening in like a singular universe, and things are changing throughout. And I love that about his story. And you do have to remember that as a viewer, that this is Neil Patrick Harris telling his daughter a story. So,
well, and that's the big, so as much as it's like a Christmas story, it also has a lot of Princess Bride in
it. Because, yes.
Like the vibe of Neil Patrick Harris with his daughter very much reminds me of the grandfather and Fred Savage in Princess Bride.
God, I need to rewatch that. It's been a while.
It's a perfect movie. It's a fucking perfect movie. Princess Bride is so good.
David Cross.
I was gonna say David Cross is so funny in one scene and so heartwarming in the next. Like, it is what I love, that the kids, like, the dad's all excited because David Cross is like, "I want $100 for that doll," and like the dad talks him down to 70. But then the kid's like, "Is there anything I can do to pay for this taxi cab?" He's like, "Nah, man, I fleeced your dad on that cab and trash doll." There's like the one line, he's like, "Hey, man, I know two guys, they'll sell me these things for $50. He's like, "You don't want none of those bald dolls from the Diaz brothers."
Yeah. It's true. It's so good, dude. And it's like, I love that scene as a whole, because he's like, why do you care about getting my sister a Cabbage Patch Kid, but not me a Nintendo? And he's like, "Do you want to deal with your sister if she doesn't get what she wants?" And he's like, "All right."
Yeah, he's like, we don't negotiate with terrorists. Yeah, we just give them what they want.
This is definitely like, upon reflection, I'm being completely honest. The first watch was definitely clouded by the events of the following day. I definitely need to rewatch it, but yeah, it's definitely going to be a rewatch. It's going to be a every year watch.
Oh, for sure.
I need a physical copy of this.
Yeah. I also got the other two things that I wrote down that I wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
Is I got so excited that there was a reference to the Billy Ripken fuckface baseball card.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because like that is like, I don't know shit about baseball cards, but I know about that baseball card. So like we're all watching it and he's like, Billy Ripken rookie card. Ugh. And he's like, oh my God, his bat. And I'm like, that's the fuckface card. Like I yelled that out loud in my friend's basement and they're like, what?
Oh my God. It was so good. I love A face. No.
No.
S face. No. F face.
Yeah. They had to blur it out to keep the PG rating. That's and then the other big thing that I had written down, the hardest laugh for me in the whole movie is towards the very end. Everyone's opened their Christmas gifts. And June Diane Rayfield is laying on the couch with her two kids. And she's trying to like have a very sweet, this was a great day type thing. But Steve Zahn got a belt sander for Christmas.
Yeah.
And you just hear it running in the background the whole time. And she keeps yelling. And then she's just like, honey, honey. And he just looks at her with a big goofy smile and waves like he is having the time of his life with this belt sander. It's such a great moment. Like you said, Steve Zahn stole this movie.
We don't appreciate Steve Zahn enough. Like, I feel like he became... He's a character actor, 100%.
Yeah.
And I feel like people judge him too much based on that. Oh, Steve Zahn's in this? He's going to play the goofy guy. But he is, but he's so fucking good at it. I mean,
he's
Steve
good at
Zahn
playing goofy with heart.
So good at what he does. Yeah. I love Steve Zahn. I don't think I've seen even movies that suck. I feel like Steve Zahn is still good.
He makes the movie Strange Wilderness so much more watchable
than
it should be. Like, but I also have to say that one of the comments I made when we were watching it was, when did Steve Zahn age into being Crispin Glover circa 1985?
Oh,
because
my
like,
because
he looks exactly like Crispin Glover in Back to the Future in Friday the 13th Part 4. Like, it's unbelievable. He's got, like, the bowl cut, the nose.
Oh,
like, I was
God.
Like, what the hell happened
think about
to
that.
Steve
he
Zahn?
Does. He looks just like him. Oh, fuck. So there's two bits I want to touch on. Going back to the power glove bit, I was so worried that they were going to build the power glove up as this thing that they needed to have. And I absolutely adore that they go to the scene with him using the power glove in that fighting game, which I think was just, I think it was a fighting game created for the movie.
Because the characters looked exactly like the two actors.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so he's playing with the power glove and it's not working. And I love the line where he's like, and then it hit us. The power glove sucked.
Well, I like that the beginning was like, at first we thought we were just making, he was making excuses for his poor performance. I also, in that scene, the other thing I love, I mean, you and I have talked about how amazing Wet Hot American Summer is.
Oh, yeah.
So the fact that the suit is set, the second Lover Boy Turn Me Loose started playing during that scene, I was like, hell yeah. And I'm doing everything in my power to not sing along. Like if I was watching this by myself in my house, I would absolutely, I was born to run. Like, I was like, but I was like, okay, I'm around three people that for whatever reason seem to really like me as a person for the last 10 years. So maybe I'll just.
This is where you and I differ. I would
because you would have
belted that out in front of the three friends. The other bit that I
turn me
loose. There you go. That's all we need to do. We just need to put a mic in front of you, and then you come out of your shell. The other bit that I absolutely loved is when they're waiting for the snow day.
Because it's
just like that. My favorite part are the kids. She's like the mom who's a teacher says to the kids, like, don't get your hopes up. We're not going to get one. And they're all three of them are sitting by the radio and they're announcing schools and their schools don't get announced. And the kids are like, oh, and the mom like knocks stuff off the table.
Yeah. She goes, God damn it. And she goes, I told you kids not to get your hopes up.
That is, as a sixth grade teacher, that is 100%
Well, relatable. I love her grading. She has her daughter grading the papers, and she's like, is this the right answer? And she goes, if there's a heart above the eye, it's wrong.
There is a kid that I've had in the past that is just like that kid with the glasses.
Yeah.
There's a kid I've had in the past.
But you know what? Connor ends up being fucking dope. Like I love that, like, Jake is just like, I just realized Connor's not a weirdo. He just was a rebel who didn't care what anyone thought of him. And I'm like, hell yeah. Like,
Matt's like, I sang the diarrhea song on the bus all the time.
Yeah, hell yeah, I did. In my life, I will take a weird ass kid like Connor any day over like an entitled douchebag child, because kids like that who are weird, like, I'm friends with, like, I do the youth group. There are weird kids at the youth group.
Yeah.
But like,
dude, kids are weird in general.
Kids are weird in general, but like, weird kids like that, like, sweetest human beings in the world, though, would never ever like hurt a fly. They're just trying to live their life. And I'll take a little bit of weirdness over it. Actually, I was just talking to my friend about this. And she was talking about, like, with her kids, you know, my kids are at that age where they're really into Pokemon. And I used to be really into Pokemon. And they'll talk to me about Pokemon. And, you know, but I'm also teaching them social skills because they're starting to read when I'm just, like, over the Pokemon. Yeah, that's my experiences with kids, too. Is, like, eventually they're like, oh, man, Uncle Matt doesn't seem to be paying attention to me as much as he was earlier. Like,
here comes Uncle Dylan. Yeah, man! Let's go! I bought this giant Snorlax mug yesterday. It holds 50 ounces of whatever liquid you want.
So the pastor at my church has four kids. The youngest daughter, she's like, I think she's 8 or 9. For obvious reasons, she's an 8-year-old child and I'm a 36-year-old man. She really didn't acknowledge me ever. Except for like them being like, say hi to Mr. Matt. And she'd be like, hi, Mr. Matt. But then one day she caught me at the church playing Pokemon Go. And she was like, wait, do you like Pokemon? And I was like, yeah. And then she's like, what's your favorite Pokemon? Like, she just would ask a bunch of Pokemon questions.
What is your favorite Pokemon? Sorry.
I really am not that invested in it. So I guess maybe Psyduck. I just like the craziness of Psyduck.
Yeah.
But I'm hanging out with my friends and my phone rings and it's the pastor calling me. And I'm like, I'm just going to let this go to voicemail because it's like a Friday. I'm out with friends. It can't be like an emergency. Like, it's probably just like, hey, there's a change on Sunday or whatever.
Yeah.
So then I get the voicemail and it's his daughter. And she goes, hello, Mr. Matt. I can't find any Pokemon at the church. We're going to get into the car to find a place. Where is the best place to find the Pokemon? This is very important. Please call me back.
Right away. That is the most adorable story I've ever heard in my life, Matt.
So I texted him back and was like,
you better contact
them. No, I texted them back and said, hey, I'm out with friends. I got the voicemail. Try the community center.
Like, good. Damn good for you, man. I don't care. Call, text. You tell that girl where she can find some damn Pokemon and Pokemon Go.
That church is Pokemon Central. So I don't think that she couldn't find Pokemon. I think she was just sick of catching the same goddamn Pidgeys all day and she wanted some variety in her life.
And that's because... so sweet that she called you. Oh my God. I'm flashbacks to the end of 8-Bit Christmas.
Yeah, there you go.
Teary-eyed. Did it make you cry? Did Christmas 365 make you cry?
Oh my God, this is very legit.
Oh my God, full circle, all right, man.
All right, so let's, I guess we'll just wrap it up by saying, like, hey, watch fucking 8-Bit
Christmas. Yeah, dude, watch 8-Bit like... Christmas. It's a great watch. It really, it has its goofy moments. It has its heartwarming moments. It's always going to, it makes you feel good. It is not, don't go into the movie thinking, oh, it's going to be laugh out loud. Like, it's a movie that makes you feel good watching. And
this is like the Ted Lasso of Christmas movies. Yeah, it's just the big warm hug.
It is. It is such a warm hug. The ending, it's just, oh my God.
Yeah.
It pulls everything.
Dylan, you got to compose yourself.
I got to put myself together. I told myself I wasn't going to cry. There's just so many bits that we like haven't touched on that I love, like them changing their code name. It was in the trailer, but it still got me. Farmer, the Lion Kid is so good.
Dude, the farmer scene. Farmer is definitely my favorite kid in the movie.
100%.
But yeah, when they're like, we need... we need someone that can come up with an elaborate lie. And he just like pops up from behind a chair. And he's like, an elaborate lie, you say? Yeah. Like,
but I was so distracted because like they really found a kid that looked just like me as a child.
You're like, did I hop into a time machine and audition for this movie unknowingly?
I'm like, that little tubby kid, it's me as a kid. And I'm so pissed. I didn't lie that much. Damn. Oh, it was so good.
Merry 8-Bit Christmas, Dylan.
Dude, merry 8-Bit Christmas to you, Matt. Oh, whoa, oh, oh, now we won't stop till the big ball drops on New Year's. Happy holly, have a great, great, great holly, have a merry, 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 happy holiday.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.